Welcome, everybody. My name is Sonia Sigler, and I started these webinars. I refer to them as the next level. I try to cover topics that I don't do as a coach and that tend to come up with my clients. And so I bring in other experts as needed to help them get to that next level for whatever that is for them. So in today's case, it is to get more specific resume help. I help people tell their stories and I help them draw out their strengths and figure out what those are, and then work with people specifically to do the resumes and the LinkedIn in ways that I don't do and can't possibly have the expertise to do as a lawyer. So I want to welcome Sue Bunnell. She is a lawyer at Wells Fargo, and she's also a self-proclaimed career therapist, which I love. And she's an amazing advocate for women and speaks a lot and is in leadership teams for a couple different organizations. And Sue, if you want to just say a little bit more about those organizations and your role, that would be awesome.
I'm the president and chair of Leading Women in Technology, which is a national nonprofit that does year-long programs that puts together cohorts to help women learn and be accountable and support each other through their professional challenges. I think it's been especially meaningful during COVID when we've had, I think, so few actual contacts with folks. I'm also on the board of Professional Businesswomen of California, where there's a large annual event. There's also some smaller events for Young Women's Professional Summit. I really enjoy doing that planning and work. The sideline, my career therapy, is just something I do on the side because I realize that resumes make perfect sense to me and inexplicably are loathed by everyone else. Although I will admit when I have to do my own resume, I also loathe it. So I do have some sympathy for all of you who are in that space, but I'm excited to be here. Thank you, Sonia. Really excited to talk to be in conversation with Deborah about what we did together.
Great. Deborah, let me introduce you. Deborah Mania has graciously agreed to have her resume and LinkedIn information and profiles laid bare and picked over. So I want to thank you for being willing to do that and being brave enough to be vulnerable to do that. I've known Deb since we started law school together a very long time ago. So Deb, do you have anything you want to add about your involvement in this?
Sue is wonderful and sees me a way that I think others that know me really well could, but in a way that I could not put onto paper to save my life.
Excellent. Well, I can't wait to hear more about this. Okay, next up is Joyce Irby. She's someone I met through a mom's club when my now 23-year-old was, three or four. So I've known her for quite a while and I've got to see her career progression through the years. And I'm excited to hear what she has to say because she's in the HR field and she uses talent to help companies grow. And I really love that. And Joyce, what else would you like to add?
Thanks, Sonia. I'm so thrilled to be here and to meet all of these other impressive people that are in this space and just impressive people that are out there looking for jobs. I really enjoy just matching people, whether it's matching people to the right opportunities or matching people to the right people, building connections just like you do, Sonia. But my career has been in human resources for about 20 plus years. I won't go into too many numbers. And then I've helped build recruiting teams. I've actually implemented applicant tracking systems to interface with LinkedIn. I've also done a lot of recruiting, executive level all the way down to executive assistant over the years. Looked at a lot of resumes and loved what you said, Sue, about doing your own. So struggled with my own, and I was on a job search last year and had the benefit of a wonderful career coach. So brought a lot of learnings from her as well when I was partnering with Mira. And thank you for having me.
Awesome. So let me introduce you to Myra Nawabi. She also graciously consented to do this. And she's actually the reason I held this because when we were coaching, she's like, I really just want someone to do this for me. And I don't do that. So I was like, well, let's put an event together and have someone look at it for you and help you through that process. So Myra, thank you for that instigation. And what would you like to add? Because I met you originally, four years ago. She was running the Lean In Palo Alto group and brought me in as a speaker on personal branding. So that's how we originally met. So what would you like to add?
I'd like to add that, I would You know, if I asked any of you to put together a circuit card or a propulsion system, you would balk at it and say, oh, heck no. And that's how I feel about resume writing, right? I much rather put together a propulsion system or design a circuit card assembly than to write about, you know, what I've done or where I've been. So I really enjoyed working with Joyce. She's amazing. But at the end, I think we agreed that it was best that I hire someone for this, you know, and one of the mottos that I have is outsource everything but love. So we're going to outsource this.
Excellent. I can't wait to hear more about that process that led you to that decision. Okay, I am going to introduce the last person. So I want to say Ruth Alexander, she cannot make it today because her father is in the ICU in LA. And I just want to make her apologies. She was super upset that she wasn't able to join us. And I'm like, take care of family first. So that's what she's doing. And I had a good conversation with her. So I know what her hot buttons are and some of her advice, which I'll share when we get to this. And she was paired with Ellen Bradley, who has had a multitude of careers in terms of being a paralegal and a teacher, and now is looking to make a full-time living from writing and editing, and she's going through a transition. So I know a lot of the questions that people asked in the RSVP form were centered around positioning and how to make that gap between what you want and what your current position or prior experience is. So we're going to chat a little bit about that. Ellen, what else would you like to add? But before you do that, I met Ellen at the same time I met Deborah, which was at the beginning of law school. And I have Ellen to thank for my first job as a lawyer. She recommended me over her husband at the time. So that tells you how strong our relationship is. So she got me started at a law firm in Los Altos, which had four attorneys. And I was like, I never in a million years want to work at a law firm again. So I've been in-house for all of my career. So thank you for that, Ellen.
Oh, we go through this all the time. You're very welcome. It was the beginning of a beautiful friendship. Yeah, this is an interesting time. I mean, it's funny how many changes we watched each other go through. And so this is a very interesting time for me. And never before in my life have I felt like I needed to have a proactive resume ready. That's what I need at this point in my life. Is to have that proactive resume that I can pull out at a moment's notice and say, here it is. So I'm really looking forward to getting help with that.
Excellent.
And I have a very loud dog who is also very unpredictable. So I will stay muted unless I need to speak.
Excellent. Thank you. So I want to put this into context. So one of the things that I've always struggled with is how to present myself or sell myself in a way that gets the strengths across. And so when I was at Sega, I discovered I hated being a lawyer and that I really wanted to be on the business side. And so I had found a job on the business side. And then the general counsel at the time was like, over my dead body, are you leaving the legal department? Like, there's not going to be a lawyer somewhere else in the company. So I ran into kind of what I labeled a political buzzsaw, which I didn't recognize at the time, but do now. And so I very much wanted to get to the business side, but had only legal experience. So that was my first hurdle in terms of being able to tell my own story. Then the second part of why this whole topic is important is the reinvention. Being at startups over the years, I had to reinvent myself multiple times because the startups would either be purchased by somebody or bite the dust and I'd have to start over again. So I've had a little bit of experience telling my story along the way. I had a come to Jesus kind of moment with a headhunter. So I was at the time the sole breadwinner. I had been at a startup for 9 years that was bought by Ernst & Young. I had to go find something else to do. And I was getting interviews, but I wasn't getting second interviews and I wasn't getting offers. And I was super frustrated and worried because I was the only income. And finally a headhunter took pity on me and she's like, I don't know what you want. Like, do you want to be COO or do you want to be general counsel? And I was like, yes, Like, that's what I've been doing for 9 years. And so she's like, but looking at your resume, I don't know what you want. So I ended up doing two flavors, one for operations and one for legal. And that helped enormously. So I can't wait to hear about those specifics as well, especially when it comes to Myra's resume in terms of getting to that next level of executive level positions from managerial positions. And then last part of the context is I've written all this advice down in two books and I'm getting ready to do the third. So the first book is Welcome to the Next Level. And at the end, I'll give you a link so you guys can all download it for free. The second book is What's Next for My Career, where we kind of peel back a few layers and look at, okay, I used to want this. I used to want to be a lawyer. Now I don't. What do I want now? So I find a lot of people coming to me as a coach is that that's where they get stuck. And they are in a career that they used to love, but don't love it anymore. And now they have to do a little more soul searching to figure out what do they want? And then how do we get there? So I help people dig that out, figure out what their story is and strengths are, and to be able to go for that position. What I don't do is what you're going to hear today in terms of how do you make it look great on the page and in the profile that you're doing. So I'm going to start with Joyce and Myra. And Myra, if you want to just give a little overview about what you were looking for in terms of help, and then Joyce, tell me a little bit about your approach. So Myra, let's start with you.
So for me, I'm very clear on what role I want and which industry I want to be in. That was, you know, right off the bat, that was easy for me. I think where I've struggled for a good chunk of my career is the positioning, right? Is I show up a certain way and I don't know how I show up, other than I can guess at it. So it was, what I was looking for was and someone that could tell me that your resume doesn't make you look like an executive, which is exactly what Joy said. She was like, nope, this isn't executive to me. But so that was helpful. The reason I came to the conclusion that I should hire a professional is because I could sit here and spin my wheels all day long and I would still end up where I ended up, which is, you know, this resume that I put together and I still think it's not even like remotely doable. So it's best that I go to the professionals, pay them and get them to do the work. But getting clarity that yes, my resume was definitely not showing me in the light that I wanted to be seen was very helpful.
So I just want to let everybody know the documents that we're talking about, and then I'm going to share those on the very specific page. It's a private page that you can't get to without the link that people can see the documents for themselves. And Myra, did you want me to share the PDF or the Word document as you guys talk?
We can start with the PDF first. So I'll tell the story of what the PDF is and then I'll explain what the Word document is.
Okay, you talk and I will share the document.
Okay, so the PDF is a resume that I had paid someone about $3,000 to create. And I looked at this and everything about this resume, when I read it, said mediocre manager. It didn't say an executive who delivered. And, you know, we've known each other long enough that you know that I deliver. So somehow that delivery was not showing up in this resume. So I bought a template from a website and then transferred a lot of this information and added some information in that other one. And that's where the Word document came in.
Okay, let me share that one. So Joyce, tell me what your reaction was when you came into this and took a look at what Myra's talking about.
Sorry, my mute button moved when you started broadcasting.
Of course.
Yeah, so yeah, just to take a step back. So when Myra and I met and she shared with me sort of her journey around getting the interviews, what happened with the interviews, and then kind of what she was not hearing from the universe about who was plugging into her skill set and who was actually pulling her into opportunities. What I suggested, and Myra shared pretty much what she just shared with you all, is why don't I just go in cold and take a look at your LinkedIn profile and take a look at your resume as if I was a recruiter without even a job profile in mind, and just give you notes on what it's saying to me. Like, what is it saying to me about where would I put this person? What are my questions? What am I not sure about? Where am I getting just maybe a vibe? And I just went through and just did an analysis both of the LinkedIn profile and then of the resume, and then gave that to Myra. And then we met again. And, you know, we spent a good amount of time together, right? We met the first time for about an hour, then we met the next time for about, I don't know, an hour and a half or so, and kind of talked through everything and realized that, you know, Myra's got an amazing background, amazing experience. And verbally, what she was telling me was just not popping out of what's out there, right? And with what her marketing brochures are saying, which is what I usually call a LinkedIn profile and a resume. And so as we started to realize the volume, and I took a Word document and started making some suggestions, started to realize, wow, this really just needs reworking. That's when Myra, and I don't want to speak for you, but that's when we kind of at the end of the conversation said, yes, let's pay somebody to go out there and just redo all of this and just take everything that's out of, you know, what you verbally would tell somebody if they were in front of you. And let's see if we can tweak it and get it into something that's going to spark interest. Yeah. Then you get the opportunity to tell your story. And that's really what you're just trying to do with the LinkedIn profile or resume. Just get that foot in the door, and then you own the messaging the rest of the time. So that was sort of the methodology that I applied, and usually what I would do for others. And like I said, I had somebody similarly do that for me last year.
Mm-hmm. Yep. In the process that you went through, Joyce, for your own search, I mean, you said you felt like you were older, like your daughter's off to college, you're now empty nester, so 50s, you're looking for a new job, you've been in HR for a long time. Tell me about that process for you personally.
Yeah, and sort of the journey you were on, and it sounds like, okay, Joyce, you've been in HR for 20 plus years, but the thing about human resources as a field, and when I started off years ago, I started off in specialties and started to realize the specialties at that point in time were the first ones to get laid off. And I happened to be one that was laid off and realized, oh, I have to become a generalist. And that took a leap of faith. So I had to go out and get a certification. And then someone had to hire me on a leap of faith that they would believe that all these other areas I had no experience in, I could do. So I did that career switch at that point in time within my overall function. And then to keep it interesting, I switched from one industry to another. And so when you look at my resume, so last year when you got to my resume, you took a look at it, I'm not a linear, I was on a fast career trajectory until I had my daughter 23 years ago and stepped off and did my own business for 11 years in consulting. So I was on a fast trajectory then. But most companies are only interested in your last 10 years. So the story I had to tell was, okay, so why did I do consulting? And then from consulting, go to a nonprofit. And then from a nonprofit, wow, boom, went into a tech startup that was global, that I had, you know, full responsibility building their HR function. I was head of HR, I was on the executive team, I was in front of the board. And then I went from there to an HR business partner role at Intuit, which didn't look like it was at the next level up. Meanwhile, they wouldn't have known that at Intuit, that's the level they were hiring, because that's the level they wanted. So there was just a bunch of stuff that was going on in my resume.
Yeah. What, so you had to explain.
That, right. I just needed to get in front of somebody to talk about it. But then I couldn't even use all these words. You have to be succinct.
Right.
So the career coach was super helpful, was to say, okay, how do we tell your story on your LinkedIn profile? How do we spark the interest in your resume? Let's get that succinct. Now talk to me about the stories you're going to tell people about why you chose your career path. And I'm here to say that trying to find a job during a pandemic, as hard as it was, it still worked. And it might've been even to my advantage to be interviewing over video. And I can't wait to walk into my company in January and have them see all the laugh lines around my eyes and the smile lines around my, you know, and have them all of a sudden realize, oh, maybe she's not as young as she looks in the great lighting and the distance from the screen. So it's gonna be, you know, and I joke, but they hired me knowing my background and my experience, but yeah. It was excellent. Really helpful last year.
Yeah. So I think if everyone can take a critical eye to their resume and LinkedIn profile and say, is this going to get my foot in the door, right? So that I can verbally tell my story, so I can give more information, so I can give that animation and passion about what I'm excited about. So I would say that's kind of the first thing I heard was take an objective look, and does it, like in Myra's case, does it really say how amazing she is? And you look at her resume and I don't think it does her justice. So I know, like when I looked at a couple of resumes this week, and they were lawyer resumes. So all I could think about was these are boring, like formal, boring, and they don't actually show the passion they have for what they do on a day-to-day basis. So that's one thing I would just say to everybody on this call today and listening to this recording is to take that tough objective look at what they have and does it actually say that to you? Let's see. Myra, I wanted to ask about your process in deciding to hire someone to help you and do this for you. And what was your biggest consideration in you know, picking the person that you did?
So I've spoken to quite a number of companies, right? I scheduled calls with them and I got quotes from $10,000 all the way to like $300. And I could not, and so I asked every one of them to send me a sample. And I said, I'd like to see a sample of a resume that you wrote. And when I read the resumes of the people that they wrote, it didn't, like, I wasn't impressed. There was no story, and it just looked like somebody wrote it for, you know, I couldn't tell it from any other corporate resume that I have gotten. When I interviewed Shimmering, the thing that stood out for me was that the gentleman's mother, his own mother, was in science and technology. And that was important to me because all the other companies that I talked to, I would say, could you please send me a resume of someone in science and technology? I received a lot of resumes of finance, marketing, and HR, which is no disrespect to all of the people who does marketing, HR, and finance. You're amazing, but that's not what I do. Right. And so it didn't represent me. And I wanted to see what the resume of an engineer looked like and how would you position somebody who spent, you know, 16 years in engineering and engineering operations, and how would you position that person? And I was very disappointed that every time I would ask, I would get a resume sample. Somebody actually sent me a resume of a procurement person saying, well, this is a technical resume. And I was like, no.
Not exactly.
And so in deciding to hire the current resume writer, and the reason I did that is because they focus specifically on people who are in engineering and technology. So I don't have to explain circuit card assembly to them over and over again as to what that means. The gentleman seems to understand technology because he was a journalist who covered technology for 20 years for NPR.
Right.
So that gave me the confidence.
Excellent. Yeah, I think asking for samples and finding the right size and the right experience for what you need is really important. Okay, I want to move on to Sue and Deborah. So Deborah, if you just want to set the stage a little bit about why you wanted to participate and why this was something you were willing to be vulnerable enough to do and share, let's start with that. And then I'll get Sue's take and her approach.
So I was looking to go back in house. I hadn't done a resume in, you know, 15 plus years. And even before that, I really hadn't had to do resumes. I've just had jobs land in my lap. So I didn't know how to do a resume since things have changed. I did a lot of research. I talked to a lot of people. I got all sorts of samples and I attended marketing seminars, branding seminars, read books. And I just am not the best resume writer in the world. And I'm probably close to the other end. So I need help.
Great. Well, you came to the right place. Sue is pretty amazing. So Sue, let's hear a little bit about your approach and then what you guys went through.
Well, why don't I let you have a look at Deborah's original resume and Deborah's original LinkedIn. I think I want you all to see what I saw when I started the conversation with Deborah. So while you're putting that up, Sonia, you know, my experience, my background is that everyone has a story to tell. And I think my goal is to make sure that the person's expertise, their excellence, their experience is really the story. So if we could get the original resume would be great. So this is the original LinkedIn. As you can see, good picture, great background picture. But the title that sits under Deborah's name was super busy, right? It was very busy telling you things about who Deborah is, but unless you were jotting it down, you weren't going to be kind of processing it. If you'll scroll down on this page, you can see that when she describes herself, it was really just a whole bunch of nouns thrown together, right? Each one of which is true and is an interesting part of Deborah's background, but taken all together, you sort of had a feeling that somebody had snipped up a book and had put important words in front of you, but kind of hadn't had it all hang together. So this was the LinkedIn, if you could flip over to the original resume. Looking at the original resume, and I've got it on my screen, so I'll start to talk to it while Sonia brings it up. It's a resume that had some of the same feel to it. It's a resume that pointed to the LinkedIn page, which I don't think was carrying Deborah forward, but it was lots of little chunks of data, right? Again, the top part was a word soup of descriptors. There was a section on core competencies, more sort of words with bullet points. Nope, that's the final one.
We need giving away secrets. One. Hold on.
Yeah. More specifically, again, as Joyce and other folks who interview will attest, you've got between 6 and really generously 15 seconds to have somebody's resume catch your eye. And so the reality is you need to make it easy for them, because it may be true, and Deborah is absolutely right, that all of those words describe her, but what the reader is forced to do is plow through some pretty dense words without a story to get to who Deborah is. Now, if Deborah's resume was put in front of them because her best friend was the hiring manager or knew the hiring manager, what have you. So looking at Deborah's resume, it immediately points out to a LinkedIn page that, as I mentioned, I don't think does that much for Deborah. There's a dense set of text up top, and then a list of core competencies, but sort of acontextual, right? I know she does regulatory compliance, but I don't know what in relation to and what the results of it were. When you get to the professional experience, she's been someplace for 16 years, but again, it's sort of just a set of words of stuff she does, right? So, you know, the reality is that we aren't just tasks, right? Manage this, develop this, oversee that. When we're reading, even in a resume, we want to see what the outcome was, right? And we also want to see what the impact to the organization was, because whether you're internal counsel or outside counsel as a consultant or whatever your role is, it may not be that you move the whole needle, but you certainly want to show the impact you have. And I'll give you a really great example, right? Somebody who's an amazing plumber, right? And somebody who's a terrible plumber, right? If you have a plumbing need, someone's like, well, you know, I come in, I replace the pipes, right? So somebody can say what they do, but if you do it really well, you can say, I do large scale plumbing projects. I do it on time and to budget. I guarantee my work for 12 months, right? So they're doing the same tasks, one of them really well, one of them not so well, but giving somebody a sense of how you do what you do and what the results of those activities are helps to, even in this, you know, two-page story, understand a little bit more about you. So Deborah had her jobs listed, and she did have key accomplishments, which is not the case of all the resumes I see. A lot of times it's just a list of activities that they do. But again, you know, as much physical space was spent on education, as was spent on her 15 years of her last job. So there was a lot of, I mean, my personal belief is every word on the resume should be aligned to the job you're going for, or should be adjacent, right? It should be an analogous skill, a skill that you can maybe, one side or the other, because if it doesn't move you forward, it should be gone, right? So there was a lot of, it was really hard to read this page, but also there was a lot here that wasn't serving her and wasn't really explaining what she did or why what she did mattered for the kind of role she's going for. So she's going for senior leadership roles in a law department in a small or medium-sized organization, the very organizations that she served as outside counsel. So if you could put up the new resume, I would appreciate it.
I'll share. What I'm going to do is just share my screen because it'll be easier to see both of them side by side.
Great.
How's that?
So the old one made, if you could scroll on the old one up to the top, that would be great. So the old one made the reader do a lot of work. The reader had to kind of hold all these descriptions in their head and then hold these core competencies in their head and try and imagine how that description up top and those core competencies may have figured into the word salad that is, you know, sort of the description right under the current job, principal law offices of Deborah. And what I did was I really wanted them to understand that the 15 years that she's been doing this job have been years of incredible service and critical partnership with her clients. So we broke out the expertise so that it was easy to understand that she is a successful outside general counsel to a wide range of the very companies that she's going to be applying to, that she's able to collaborate not only to, you know, to identify, assess, mitigate, and manage legal risk, but also really to empower the sales folks, because without revenue, the whole thing falls apart, right? Again, when you get to the experience part of her current job, it's clear there's a basic description of what she does. She provides transactional compliance, governance, et cetera, skills, right, to all these different types. But again, her talents and skills are broken down in easy to understand chunks, commercial and transactional, compliance, employment, IP and privacy, because the kind of companies that are going to be hiring her are going to have this concern on their mind, right? The document that we wrote is absolutely written for the easiest possible consumption by the reader. And when you have 6 to 15 seconds, you have to be mindful of who your reader is, right? On the left-hand side, somebody who was reading this very slowly, with a ton of patience, who had time to map back and forth, probably would have gotten somewhere near there, but not with the ease or elegance. And one of the things about a resume is, I'm applying to work for you. I fit into your culture. I'm able to clearly show up and present myself in a way that helps you understand who I am. That's what the resume on the right says. The resume on the left says, here's my information, you figure it out. Now, not with that glib attitude. That's totally not what Deborah was thinking or saying. But again, it's one thing to invite someone over for a meal and show them a table full of ingredients and say, welcome to dinner, right? And that's what the resume on the left said. The resume on the right is a meal that's been cooked for you, shaped and portioned and served for you so that it's as easy as possible to consume the excellence of Deborah's legal background, because Deborah had an amazing legal background. She just wasn't talking about it.
Right. Yeah. I think I want to go back to one thing you said, Sue, is that this is digestible in a way that this one is not on the left. This quickly allows the company or the HR person who may not understand every single thing that goes on in each of these areas that she has experience in these areas. So it's like checking that box right away that she has that experience, as opposed to, I can't find it over here. All the same information is on here, but it's so much more digestible on this side, on the new one.
If I can interject, I just wanted to say that this was not anywhere near my first version of this. You know, it is really hard if you don't know what is expected on the other end, mm-hmm. to be able to figure out how to present that. And having somebody who knows your industry and who understands the information you're trying to present, I think is key. And that was something that Sue brought to the table, that other people that I've dealt with, you know, I've talked to formally or informally, they may not have understood the legal industry or where somebody fits in as a lawyer in-house and what they bring to the table or should bring to the table. So for people trying to get their resume in order, that was super important to me, made a big, big difference.
Yeah. Deborah, why don't you talk a little bit about what you did to actually make these changes on here?
Oh, I agonized. It was hard. It was so hard. As many times as I have written and rewritten my resume and my LinkedIn to try and fit them into what I saw as somebody else's who looked good, you know, oh, that's a good format. Or these people who know what they're doing say do it this way. It was still really tough because, like Sue says, you need to tell that story. Mm-hmm. And then she gave me the buckets to put everything in for my current experience and said, go out and write your accomplishments, your stories. So you have your story sheet. And I've gone through that exercise before, but it was a little different because it wasn't just give me accomplishments or things that you're happy that you were able to do or had an impact. It was give me examples with the story behind them that fit into these buckets. Right. And getting the buckets, I think, was the first step to being able to put this on the right path. Don't you agree, Sue?
Yeah, I think a lot of it too is just talking about how you think about yourself, right? I think when you see yourself as, you know, somebody who has seen this kind of situation, who has done this kind of response, activity, intervention, you know, proactive, reactive work, whatever, and produce this kind of result that's had this kind of impact or outcome on the company. When you start to think about your stories like that, I really do think that thinking deeply and well about how you set up your resume is actually fantastic preparation for the interview, because you start to think about the full story. And obviously the resume is tiny little condensed version of it, but it really does, I think, prepare you for that. So again, if you could flip to the second page of both resumes, again, one of the things that was important that was that we really emphasized things in earlier jobs that she didn't have in her current job. And so again, when you're on a resume, you don't need to say the same thing over and over again. You need the earlier entries in your resume to highlight the things that maybe you haven't had an opportunity to do or haven't been called upon to do in your current role or the roles over on the first page. Again, to the extent possible, it's always great to put in numbers, to put in dollars saved, dollars earned. But even when you can't use objective or quantifiable numbers like that, it's important to talk about time saved, because time, after all, is money. It is important to talk about, you know, either the downward trend of bad things or the upward trend of good things. Mm-hmm. Help them to understand what your impact is. And especially in a where Deborah is looking to join a company that is, you know, that may be small and still be run by founders, it was really important to draw out the details of the job immediately above education, certificates, and membership, and talk about the fact that she founded a company and she ran a company and she set up a company. Again, something that's going to help them to understand that she's not a lawyer from big law who's done, you know, one thing over and over again. She's somebody who set up her own company. We made a big point of making it a little bit clearer in her education, certificates and membership, what was most important. And we deleted a bunch of stuff that, you know, 20 years into your career really didn't much matter anymore. Probably mattered to get your first job, but didn't matter after that. So we right-sized the education, certificates and membership to really give the space to the stuff that matters, which is the work she's done since she graduated.
I think one of the questions I get a lot, and there are some in the chat window, as well as the questions that were sent beforehand, of I've been told different things. So I've been told to do the paragraph versus I've been told to do bullet points. What is right? And I kind of fall in the middle where I give a little bit of a description and then I go into bullet points. And I try to do that on LinkedIn and I try to do that on my resume. And I hope I never, ever find a job through my resume again. but if I ever had to, that kind of how I approach it. And I really like, Sue, that you said everything that comes after your initial experience has to support it and not be repetitive, because I think that's one of the things people can fall into, that trap of, oh, I did the same thing here, let me just repeat it.
Right. I think, you know, you wouldn't go into a grocery store and go do your big shopping without a basket. And if you scroll up to the current job, Sonia, you can see, you know, they're going to get a lot more detail, but under fractional general counsel, there's a basic description of what she does. She provides mm-hmm. transactional compliance, et cetera. If they don't read anything else, and they will read more than that, but if they don't read anything else, that needs to be, you know, if they read the expertise and the first job description, those two together really need to speak to the call to action that's in the job description. On that point, I want to say, we were looking at a number of different jobs. So, you know, I really do believe that when you're applying for a job, do you need to edit your document, your resume in a huge way every time? No, but I do think it is good to make sure that it addresses every major requirement and call to action from the job description. I'm not one. I know the applicant tracking systems are used in about a quarter to a third of all jobs, more and more actually. I think it's going to be with Lever and with some other things that are out there in the world. I do think that, you know, where you are describing something using a certain phrase, like software as a service, right? If they use hosted software, they use cloud software. Again, there's nothing wrong with using the same terminology they use in order to have your words picked up most clearly. But more than anything, making sure that you're describing the same activities, traits, characteristics, intentions, achievements that are described in the job description are really important. Because if you take the attitude of, this is fine, I will absolutely explain how mapped I am to the job when I get in the room, the chances are you may not have the opportunity to get into the room if it doesn't align well enough for them to see you as successful in the role.
Right. So one of the questions is, does font matter? So I noticed one of the things here is it changed dramatically. More space seems bigger.
There's serif and sans serif. Serif has the curly cues on it, like Times New Roman, Garamond, Georgia. Sans serif is a little cleaner. And frankly, I've done a ton of studies on fonts because I'm that kind of nerd. Sans serif is actually a ton easier on the eyeball to read. Having it spaced just slightly is a lot easier to read. Having some differences in margin, having some differences in presentation, some paragraphs, some bullet points, actually it leads the eye downward in a way that has been proven by people who do this for a living and not me. I just use all of their research to my advantage. So again, you really do want to make it visually easy to consume, because there are times when I've seen a page full of bullet point and it was actually not a bad resume content wise, but I had to take out a ruler to read it because it was so visually impossible to get through. And it may be stupid, but you know, the automated tracking system would have activated that person as a great candidate, but they may have gotten short shrift because they haven't made it easy. And frankly, it's a real skill. Can you present the relevant information in a way that your audience needs it in order for them to understand and make a decision? That's as relevant for a salesperson as it is for a marketer, as it is for an engineer, as it is for head of product. And if you can't do that in your resume, when you've had all the time in the world to work on it, what's going to make them think that you're capable of doing that when you need to do it like this at work?
Right.
So why don't we bring up the two LinkedIn pages?
Okay.
I think that'd be a good opportunity. So as far as I'm concerned, LinkedIn is a great conversation with the reader, right? It should be the natural language that you would use if someone said, hey, you know, Deborah, tell me about yourself. You guys saw the LinkedIn that Deborah had before. It was dense with descriptors and types of work that she did, but you didn't really get a sense of the lovely lady that is Deborah, right? And why she's so enthusiastic and what she loves about the job and the fact that she's normally called in to start on these complicated, complex transactions that they can't do on their own, but they love working with her and it builds a relationship. And I thought that was actually a fantastic story to tell, that she has been sort of a serial outside general counsel to these companies over the last 15 years. And I thought that was a great story. It also sets her up for an opportunity to go from being an outside general counsel to being an inside general counsel. So I think if we can bring those up, I think I can show you the difference in the way Deborah talked about herself, which I think is going to make a difference, not just again on the static document that is the LinkedIn, but ultimately, Deborah, I think in the way you talk about yourself in the interviews that I know you're going to have.
Okay, let me know which ones you see. You see both Deborahs?
Yep, we see both Deborahs.
Okay.
So you can tell the descriptor goes from being a series of roles to being a description of who she is, right? Yeah. She is an outside GC to high growth tech companies and a nonprofit founder. Being a founder is going to help folks who are founders understand she's got some identity with them. The about story, I'm not going to read it to you because you're all are super good readers, but I think you can see that it tells a story about who she is and how she comes to be such a valued part of her clients' success. So Deborah, I'm not sure, I'd love to hear how you feel about the transformation of the LinkedIn.
You know, Sonia's comment actually is apropos. I just feel lighter. It's more like how I talk to people when I'm actually having a conversation instead of trying to fit a resume into a LinkedIn format, which is pretty much what I was trying to do. Yeah. And I understood that LinkedIn is supposed to be this marketing thing. I understand what marketing is. I now understand what personal branding is, but I didn't know what to do with my resume content and how I was supposed to fit that into LinkedIn. It escaped me. It seems really obvious now, but it hasn't been obvious at all.
Yeah, I think you're getting your message across better now. I think a lot of people make this same mistake in terms of putting a title here and a laundry list of things here, as opposed to who they are. And I think for what you're trying to achieve and find a role with a new or startup company, that this is much better in terms of nonprofit founder. Being a founder, like Sue said, is going to resonate with people who are founders looking for someone like you.
Yeah, Sue was instrumental, obviously, in putting this all together and trying to help me figure out and understand the role of LinkedIn. But something she said really resonated with me, so I'd like to repeat it here. She said that LinkedIn should be a conversation with somebody about your resume. So if you're talking through your resume in an informal setting, how would you do it? And that's the way that she directed me to start rewriting. Yeah. And that approach really was very helpful.
Yeah, huge difference for you. I just want to add one thing here. So Deborah puts, and this I see a lot of people have issues with in terms of being able to map what they're doing and what their accomplishments and achievements are to something that's numbers based. So something Sue said earlier that's really important is, how can that be mapped to a number, whether you're increasing revenue or whether you're decreasing, a loss? How can that be mapped to numbers? I know I personally struggled with that. One of the questions I was asked, well, how many people have you trained? I'm like, I don't know. So I broke it down. I've trained people from kindergarten to professionals. I've taught yoga to kindergartners. I've taught statistics and linguistics to lawyers. And then I broke it down. Okay, law firm lawyers, other conferences, private webinars, all of it. And it's over 1,000 lawyers. So when I started breaking it down and mapping it to what I'd actually done, then I could come up with some numbers. Otherwise, I felt like I was just doing my job. Oh, I negotiated with 50 banks to launch Quicken Online Banking back in the day. You know, when you actually start breaking it down, then you can map to some of those numbers. And I know helping people tell that story is one of the things that I do and I try to do in terms of finding their strength and finding those stories that can map to those numbers and difference.
It's hard to come up with the numbers. Luckily, I had some notes from some of the things that I did, but I didn't have the exact numbers. And sometimes you really can't quantify exactly because, you know, when I was in house, what I used to say is, look, if I'm doing a good job, you're not going to know how much money I save you. But if you really want me to look and go out and get verdicts that are against people for making the mistakes I'm counseling you not to do, we could have that discussion. But I don't know how helpful that's going
to be. Nobody's willing to pay for that.
Right.
I use those numbers all the time to convince my people to do the right thing. Deborah, I see you on that. But, for us, it was important to, I think, just to make it easy to see what was most important. mm-hmm. and to delete the stuff that wasn't moving her forward. Again, both the LinkedIn document and the resume, those are marketing documents, right? When someone's trying to sell you a Tesla, they are never telling you about the glove box. They're never going to tell you about the color of the wiring, right? They want to tell you about the things that matter most, the engine size, the beautiful screen, the whatever it is in the Tesla. I don't have one, obviously. I would be doing a much better job of describing it if I did. But, you know, taking it back to the resume, you know, really ask yourself, what is critical, not for me to say, like, there's a lot of stuff in people's resume that they have such a hard time deleting. And I'm like, it's not helping you. It doesn't mean that that didn't help you get where you are, but you don't need to write those words on this page to try and get this job. It's really be strategic about what's there and really be ruthless about what you're willing to cut.
Yeah, I think that's important, right? You need somebody else to do that.
Yeah. Or to say it's okay to let this go.
Well, you need them to help you figure out what's important and what's not, because doing it yourself, it's like decluttering your house or getting rid of some of your clothes that you maybe haven't worn in a few years, but you have fond memories of wearing maybe, right? Yeah. You need someone else. You need that objective point of view.
Yeah, I think that's hugely important. I want to talk a little bit about, let me just close these documents so I don't get lost in these. I do want to talk a little bit about Ellen's situation. And Ellen, I'm going to, while you tell us a little bit about your transition, I'm going to look for your resume and the job description. if you just want to talk a little bit about what you're doing, and I will share the things that Ruth shared with me in terms of helping make that transition. So,
okay. So, the place I'm at now is that I never really focused on career. I focused on being someone else's support for a very long time. And so what you'll see in my experiences that I start in one arena and I move into various arenas all around, and none of it kind of really seems to be like a cohesive career path, because it wasn't. It was more about adapting to circumstances and going on to the next thing and being in a support role and doing what I could for that type of thing. And I clearly totally neglected tools like LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. This is, I can't even think about the last time I actually went beyond this. So you can see this is clearly, it's skeletal. Mm-hmm. And that's, I never really invested in that as a tool. So, that's the LinkedIn part of it. I have the resume part that I submitted to was also a resume that I put together when I was promoted at the library and took the next position up to library director. And it's a very small library. I think we could fit inside the bathroom of the New York Public Library. But it's, again, this was, they needed this for their files. So when I was the assistant director, I threw it out there. Mm-hmm. It is not at all directed towards the career path that I want now, which is to develop my career as a writer, which is something I always wanted to do. So I started researching I've been doing content creation and communications for companies and attorneys and that kind of stuff for 7 years now, nine years now. And I want to make that the focus. So I started researching, if you are in a creative field, what do you need to express through your resume? And this may contradict with stuff here, but everyone has said it needs to show your passion for your creativity. So that's why it looks so different.
Can you see both?
I'm sorry.
Can you see both?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think your first resume, and then I'm going to ask Sue and Joyce to chime in here. How do people feel about contact information on the resume, like address and things? Because I've seen a couple different articles recently of don't include contact information, like don't take up valuable space. And I've seen others say, make it easy for people to contact you.
Honestly, I mostly I think the street address is used to Zillow. So nobody is going to contact you using that. I think they might mail a package home of welcome package, but mostly what they need is your phone and your email. That's how they're going to contact you.
Okay.
I think, this one is really heavily emphasizing the education, which is something, Ellen, must have been what you really wanted, to help them see your background in English and in rhetoric with a concentration in all these different types of technical writing. So I think that's something you've definitely brought to the fore.
Yeah, and just to weigh in super quick, as somebody who's looked at a lot of resumes, as mentioned, and just, I'm trying to make the match to the roles and match to the functions, I would echo what Sue said about, you don't have to put your street address. I do like to see the LinkedIn profile link, because recruiters do heavily, that's where they start most of the time. And actually, to be honest, is they start on LinkedIn. And then from LinkedIn is the gateway to, maybe the next step. But if you send in a application through an applicant tracking system, the next thing you're going to do is go to your LinkedIn. And so I do like to see that in there at some point. It doesn't necessarily always have to be in the resume, because if you do actually apply online in an applicant tracking system, you're probably going to put your LinkedIn profile link there, because there's a field for that. The other aspect that I would say, and I saw something in the chat about, do I do paragraphs or do bullets? I'm going to come back to, it really depends on the industry and the function and the professional space you're in, because I can tell you that for like tech resumes, and so if Myra and I were going to work longer together, you don't want a lot of paragraphs, because really literally what the engineers want to see is they really want to see the succinct description, and then they want to see, your success in writing code or your success in delivering on whatever technological stack you've been working on. And then they want to see your certifications. They want to see if you're published. And so there's just a different approach to resume writing. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more white space.
Yeah.
In something like an attorney resume, which is what Deborah was doing and Sue was working on, it makes perfect sense that you're going to have to be a little bit more detailed. And the recruiter, and kind of like, what I'd love to get away from is the mindset that all recruiters don't really know what they're talking about and don't know what to look for in a resume, because honestly, I can tell you that a lot of companies, the recruiters know more sometimes than what the hiring managers know about what they're looking for. So you will have highly specialized recruiters. And in the companies I've worked in, you'll have recruiters that are 100% focused on how do we get what they call the GNA, which are the functional support teams in. So they're going to be focused on how do I fill the roles in legal? How do I fill my roles in finance? How do I fill my roles in HR? And they may even have subspecialties. Then you've got the tech recruiters, who are many, and some of them are technologically trained. And so they know how to parse through a resume very, very quickly. And, as Sue said, there's seconds, literally seconds, that they're looking at LinkedIn profiles and resumes because the volume is so high. So I would just say there is no one size fits all. And that's why, to Myra's point, it's really helpful to find somebody to help you with your resume and LinkedIn profile that knows your space.
Right. Super important. So one of the things I chatted with Ruth about is the transparency and authenticity. So one of the things I have on my resume at the very bottom, it says plays trombone, trumpet, tuba simultaneously. And I had one of my mentors say, you got to take that off of there. And I'm like, no, I leave that on there. If they don't understand that I have a sense of humor and that I bring that approach to my job, then that is probably not the right place for me. So I've seen recently, whether to include hobbies or not. There was a big dust up on LinkedIn in terms of articles about including hobbies, don't include hobbies, and people saying it got me a job because I had background in photography. It got me kicked out of a job because I said I do whatever. So there were just, I think people have differing views of whether to include that information or not. I personally include it because I think it's important to bring all of me to what I'm doing. And I knit in meetings, so I'm pretty clear that that's going to be a part of who I am.
I know Mary Grace is knitting right now, Sonia, so I think you're in good company. the one thing I can tell you is I think if you have space for it, whether it's community involvement or hobbies or interests, I do think it gives folks a hook into who you are and seeing a little bit more of your person than just your descriptions. You know, I loved the volunteer experience there. Again, I think it shows a little of your heart, not just your brain and your fingers. But whether it's hobbies or volunteer experience, I do think it's important to have some of yourself there for sure. I think it helps them to see the full person.
Yeah, I think I go back to what you said originally, Sue, is it has to map to what matters for what you're trying to get. So I put my school board experience on there when I'm trying for a board position, because I want them to know I had 14 years of experience on a board already. It may not include the board time I spent on an orchestra, because that was more fundraising. But if fundraising matters, then I'm going to put that on there. So I think it goes back to the storytelling you're trying to do for what you're trying to achieve, whether you include it or don't include it. Joyce, do you have any strong feelings either way?
I just wanted to echo that, and then also say there's another nuance. If you have targeted certain companies, research their culture, and that'll also let you know what you should be putting on the resume. Because I can tell you that putting things like yoga, kayaking, et cetera, at the bottom of your resume at a place like Google, for example, perfect, right? You know, they're trying to see all, you know, certain companies are all about bringing your whole self to work, and they want to understand what your whole self is. And I'm going to go back to, you know, some of the questions that I saw that you gave us preemptively, Sonia, and I'm going to come back to, you know, some of us on the call, maybe over 40, are really concerned about kind of getting out there at an age that is not the stereotypical age to be job searching. And, you know, showing your activities is another way to show, hey, I am active. I'm out there. I am energetic. I run marathons. I do this. I do that. It's just another piece of the marketing that you're trying to craft somebody's impression of you so you can get the foot in the door.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I also want to add one thing you and I talked about, Joyce, in terms of the ageism, is show that you are working on either certifications or list certifications that you've received, or education, continuing education, anything that shows that you are making an effort to stay current, making an effort to inform yourself, educate yourself, and to stay abreast of what's important in your industry.
Yeah, and I would also say, and this is coming from the work that I also do in my life around equity, inclusion, and diversity, and I have a lot of passion in that area, and I'm on a learning journey as well. So as I'm saying some of this, it's just with eyes wide open, is if you look at what, and if you've read all the articles about what the biases are against people over 40 and what the, you know, what people think about us, right? Mm-hmm. That we are going to sit back, that we're not in that learning journey still, that we're maybe not energized by our workspace, that we're going to come in thinking we know everything already. So what we're trying to show is that we've got this learning mindset. We're still really out there. We're really curious, and that we're not done, right? So it's, you know, just kind of putting that message out there that, you know, I'm kayaking, I'm doing classes, I'm teaching yoga, I'm on a board, I'm volunteering on the weekends, by the way, I'm with Habitat for Humanity, you know, whatever it is that you're doing that is showing that you're, you know, relevant, energetic, and you still got a lot to give. And we know that about ourselves. And we just want to make sure that people out there that are looking at a resume that may have a little bit of bias, you know, it goes away.
One thing I really like about this version of Ellen's resume is that she tells a little bit about herself and what's important in terms of the skills that she has and that she can put to work for you. And I think that's one thing I see a lot with clients is they don't know what their top skills are. So we kind of tease that out. And then they don't know how to communicate that. So knowing your value and being able to show that value, articulate it, I think is the other part of that. And then I think what Sue said and what Joyce, you echoed, is be able to map that to what matters for the position and the company that you're going for. If it's not Google and they don't care about kayaking and yoga, then maybe don't include that. I think that's important to match that as well. Sue, do you have anything to add in terms of the self-promotion? We had several questions. One, what's the best way to articulate your value to leadership and others in your organization? And then some people are like, I just need to understand self-promotion better. One of the things that I usually have people concentrate on is who needs to know your message and what do they need to know? But I wanted to hear your thoughts as well.
Yeah, that's a good way to frame it. I think when you stop thinking about it as tooting your own horn or, you know, selling the used car, whatever it is that makes folks feel a little bit, you know, put off, when you start talking about, you know, explaining the things that you can do, right? Again, always the frame, it comes from an empathetic frame, is how is this going to hit them? What are their needs? Well, you know, what impact are these words going to have on my listener? Again, when you talk about what you can do, it's one thing to say, yeah, I did this, I crushed it, it was awesome. It's another thing to say, you know, I've been reading, to, you know, to the point Joyce made about really learning about the company you're interviewing with, I've been reading you have this challenge, and I've had a lot of experience putting together programs like this, or putting other products like this or technology like this. Again, when you frame what you're capable of doing as something that will be an absolute benefit to hit the ground running with the company you're interviewing with, what you've done is you've helped them to understand that you're the puzzle piece that fits in their jigsaw puzzle, right? You are the person who is they're looking for. So again, being able to clearly articulate what you can do, how you can do it, and how it could impact them is the critical part of this, because it isn't just bragging, it's explaining and mapping from yourself to the company in a way that they certainly don't know if they don't know you, but they may not have been able to make it, especially when you're doing something that isn't directly applicable, but you're arguing by analogy that you may never have done this kind of transaction, but you've done a million transactions that are, you know, brother and sister transactions to it. And you're very familiar with all the topics and familiar with all the issues, the provisions, the negotiations, the alternative, whatever. So then helping them understand that, you need to frame it for them. It's a gift that they understand what you're capable of doing, not gross that you're talking about yourself. Again, you want to stand out. You want to be persuasive, right? This is a marketing event. A resume and a LinkedIn are both marketing events, but you know, one is more formal, the resume, one's more informal, but you know, I think you have to have enthusiasm for what you've done and how well you've done it, because it's a sorry dog who won't wag his own tail. Right? And you need to not be waiting for other people to make your story for you. You really do need to be able to succinctly, positively, confidently make your case. Frankly, the people on the other side of the phone or the Zoom are expecting that. They're expecting you to advocate for yourself. And if you don't, it may come from just a lack of confidence when somebody is very capable, or it may just be that they're not good at it. And recruiters and hiring managers, when they can't tell, they don't know.
Right. And they'll make assumptions whether they know it or not. So one of the things I think is hugely important is the self-promotion in the job that you're in now. So one of the things I talked to Joyce about when she was looking to change positions was, she's like, I've got all this experience, but people I work with now, the last 5 years, don't even know I had that experience from 12 years ago. And how do you convey that information in a way that doesn't seem so self-serving or bragging or whatever you want to call it, going against your culture. I think it's an essential job skill. I think it's closing the loop. Like when you finish negotiating something, so if I just look at Deborah's resume, when you finish negotiating that deal, send a note out saying, yeah, we closed the deal. It was awesome. I worked with so-and-so on the sales team. We nailed it, you know, give the kudos to everybody. And at the same time, that reflects well on you. And I think if we think that as part and include it as part of the communication of that deal is signed, then it's easier. And God, it takes practice.
And frankly, it's information they need to know, right? Yeah. You're going to get a thank you note from the people you work with all the time. I am absolutely in the practice of sending it to my manager and saying, hey, got this really great note. The project was hard for this reason. Yeah. You know, here was some creative solution we proposed, or here's something we tackled together. And, you know, again, he's happy to hear it. We've got a good relationship, but it's really important for me to continue to present myself as dynamic and effective and creative and solution oriented. And that, you know, whether it's in an email or in your weekly one-on-ones, whatever the conversation is, we all do need to learn to do that, because that's where you have these conversations of future development. I mean, some people are looking to move somewhere else in their larger organization. And I think those conversations actually set the stage for those moves.
Yeah. And I think setting the stage for those promotions or for those raises or for that change in role, even if it's in the same company, is really important to grease those skids. That example I used at the very beginning when I tried to move to the business side at Sega, and the general counsel at the time was like, NFW, it would have been better had I been able to grease those skids and say, this is why it makes sense. And I won't be lawyering in this group. I'll be teaching them how to be better negotiators. I'll still send all the agreements to the legal department to be, you know, to be papered, but this is on the deal-making side, not on the papering side. So that would have been better at that time. And that would have been a hard lesson learned, obviously. But Joyce, I wanted to hear a little bit about you in terms of how you bring that experience into the conversation, as opposed to they don't even know that I do this work.
Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to find a job within your own company, it's a little trickier, right? Because you really don't want to look like you're saying, oh, we used to do it this way where I was before, or, you know, you don't want to look like you're being self-aggrandized, right? But that's where it gets really interesting. And that's why it's really good to have either a coach or somebody to bounce ideas off of, like I had with you, Sonia, and I kind of had my little board of directors during my job search. And I took some real, I went inward, I went to the beach, I journaled, I did all these things to really figure out, okay, what do I really want next? And what is my story? Like, what are the stories? And wrote stories for each of the jobs I had. And so when it comes back to, you know, how do you say it without self-aggrandizing? Look at it this way. The people are talking to you because they want to know this about you.
Right.
So if you're not going to tell them your story, there's nobody else that will.
Right.
And that's really why you're there. So you're, you know, going in with the, and I coach people on this all the time on a day-to-day basis, go into a conversation knowing what outcome you want from the conversation,
mm-hmm.
and then have your talking points ready for that. And so in an interview, the outcome you want, and kind of this is the cool part also about interviewing online, is you can have all your notes right here and you can say, okay, when I leave this conversation, here are all the stories I want to make sure that they know about me. And here's all the talking points I have. And as you finish one, you just kind of check one off, you check one off, you check one off, and you make sure that you own the conversation to the extent you can.
Yeah.
The only other thing I would say just to for people out there that are interviewing is that you're going to have multiple interviews. Keep track of the stories you tell which person, because when they all come together at the end to, you know, collectively say what they've learned about you, you don't want them all to say, oh, well, we only heard this one story. So that means they've only done that one thing. You want to have different stories and really articulate the different stories to different people. And again, it's not about bragging. It's about making sure they have a picture of you to get you in the door.
You are painting the picture. And I think it's really important to have the ammunition. So one of the things I always work with clients to do is, what are your top 3 to 5 strengths? And then what are the stories for each job that you've had that maps to that? So one that I developed in a group of lawyers was, I like to organize chaos. And what I say is, every job I've been in, I have organized, made up a database, tracked contracts, contract management. Like when I was at Sega, we had to do a lot of M&A due diligence. So reading through agreements, and we didn't have them in any one place. So started a central filing system, like started a database so we could look it up, you know, remotely, all that kind of good stuff. And then I realized I've done that everywhere I've been, including when I was in college, including when I was in junior high. So I like bring in those stories of like, I've been doing this my whole life. I was voted best organized in kindergarten, and that is what I am still doing. So those kind of silly stories and those kind of skills, they come out, you know, no matter what you want. So you might, like one of the things I have people do if they can't figure out what those skills are and what those stories or success stories through their career is, what did you love doing as a kid that you're still doing now, or that you wish you were doing now? And that kind of brings up those things. We have about 10 more minutes, so I want to make sure we get some of the questions that are answered that we didn't already cover in our questions beforehand, and then a couple that are in the chat. So one thing, Jennifer, it's very hard to write about yourself when you hear a life of admonishments not to brag. Absolutely. This is universal. I've given talks worldwide about this, and it is universal for men and women. We think it's hard for women, but men are like, you see the braggadocio that is the one standing out there saying all the good things about him. And you're like, why can't that guy shut up? This is a skill that's learned, and you really, truly have to leave those self-limiting beliefs at the door. You really do. And so it's just practicing.
I just want to hop in here. I think most of us are so worried about crossing a line that we're standing about 25 feet back from the line. And the reality is, you know, imagine, you know, it's hard to find the voice. I sometimes tell folks I work with, have a glass of wine, right? And sit down and imagine a voice in your head who's your biggest supporter, your mom, your sister, your aunt, whoever is your biggest cheerleader. And you would say, well, I manage this project. And they would say, you manage the project and you've got everyone on track. And you know, like the, imagine the cheerleader enthusiasm that person would have for you. Now, and again, I think to the point Joyce was making, write it all out. This is not what's going to be in the document. This is not what's going to be the story. But for people who have a really tough time bringing it out, I think there is magic to putting it down on paper. And then obviously you're not going to leave it like that. You're going to spend some time crafting it. So it sounds like somebody who's enthusiastic about a job well done. Enthusiasm about a job well done is the perfect level of energy, but too embarrassed to tell you that I did something good is not the level of energy you want, because you're now going to make them guess, am I a good plumber or am I a bad plumber, right? Because there's all kinds of marketers and engineers and everything else under the sun. You've got to give them some markers of being successful, effective, efficient. Otherwise, why would they assume that you are?
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I mentioned in terms of closing the loop and being able to see that self-promotion as part of the work that you're doing is nobody knows what you're doing. They're so into whatever they're doing, they don't necessarily know what you do. And so sharing that information, even with your own boss, okay, even with your own boss, is really important, because they may not know what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. So I think that just as a mind shift in terms of seeing that as part of the work that you do on a daily basis. Deb, I see you want to
I wanted to say two things. The glass of wine bit, actually Sue did tell me that, and yes, it does help. But I also wanted to say something that Sonia really helped me with, and that was trying to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up. And some of her exercises about, you know, one of them that really hit me hard, I kind of thought, oh, I'm going to get nothing from this. But the every job exercise, writing down every single job, including the lemonade stand and the skills that went into it, and then looking at the trends, yeah. You know, her organizing everything since kindergarten, everybody has something like that, but you just don't realize it until somebody else points it out to you, or that piece of paper from that silly exercise you're going to learn nothing from tells you and stares you right in the face, so you can't dismiss it. Yeah. And then I just wanted to say also that Sue was really, she was instrumental in trying to find that voice, and you sometimes need to have somebody else to help you find how to talk about yourself. It's just, we hear so many messages growing up and in our positions, even if you're supposed to tell your boss what you're doing in a one-on-one, doesn't get out to everybody else. It's not in writing. You can't go back to it years later and say, oh, what did I do? What did I accomplish?
I think it's so important, Deborah, to actually write those accomplishments down. I think either on a daily basis or weekly basis, to be able to share those. One of the most successful people I ever met actually did that every Friday, whether it was to the marketing team or her boss or boss's boss. That's something she took a few minutes every Friday to do. And it just resulted in a stratospheric rise for her. So get over the fact that it's hard, and get over the fact that I don't know what an accomplishment is. You know, when as a lawyer, I'm just doing my job, and break it down to the nitty gritty to say, what did I do this week? Myra, thoughts on this?
You know, one of the things that I learned from one of our speakers at Palo Alto Lean-In was she was very clear about becoming a chief operating officer. That was like her, you know, she had a goal and she would work towards that. So she and her husband had a deal that every Sunday for a couple of hours, he would take their daughter and he would go and leave her in the house. And she would spend those couple of hours actually doing a digest of what happened in the week, what worked well, what didn't work well, what she was keeping and what she was eliminating. And being very strategic about where you are and where you want to go. I've never had that problem. Since the age of six, I knew I wanted to be an astronaut. I wanted to work in space. And every detour just whatever happened in life, I never lost sight of that goal. What changed for me is, you know, after I got into aerospace and I worked for a number of years, is the realization that I was the unicorn, so-called unicorn. And then in that moment in time, I sat down with myself and I said, okay, so if I am a unicorn, is this how I want women and girls to see me? Or do I want more people to come so that there's more unicorn? I'm not the unicorn, right? And then there's more of you.
Yeah.
and so for me, I've never had problems with sitting down and getting grounded and saying, okay, where am I and where do I want to go? If anything, it's finding the right people to align myself with, because my goals are very, very ambitious. And you know, when I sit down and I say, I want to be the chief operating officer of an aerospace company in 10 years, that tends to scare people. And they're like, oh gosh, I don't know how to help you. So
break it down.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, having sat down and said, okay, well, what's the next step? Okay. Become a director. What's the next step? Become a VP. Well, what's the next step is, you know, and work towards that and steadily. And maybe sometimes you have to leave and go to something smaller than to come back to something bigger.
Yeah.
All of that are things that you have to do, but you constantly have to be working it. It can't be something that you say, oh, well, you know, today I did it and I'll forget about it till, you know, 5 years from the road.
Right.
I don't think it works that way. And when I learned that from Marlene Santel about every Sunday spending a couple of hours, I've adopted that I do that every Sunday myself.
That is brilliant. And it also speaks to what a supportive partnership. So if your spouse can take your kids or your spouse can take the dog or whatever and leave the house and you're quiet, that's an amazing amount of time to be able to do that reflection, that it actually does take time to reflect on what you've done and what you've accomplished. That's brilliant. Ellen, last words.
It's really, I empathize with everybody because I'm feeling it myself. Like Deborah, I fell into a lot of jobs in the past and didn't really have to make that effort to introduce myself to the world in a method that wasn't live. And so taking this on at a point when I can actually look back and say, there's a lot here, but focusing on the positives and not just things like the gaps or the things that didn't work out the way I wanted them to, and learning to reframe all those things. That's a real exercise. And it's a good one because you have to do it when you get to the interview and stuff. But I think it's a skill that I've always kind of poo-pooed people saying, you know, take down your resume every year and look at it and update it and keep it fresh. And now I'm like, oh, hell yes, I'll be doing that.
I think that was one of Ruth's comments to me was, keep it updated. Make sure your resume is up to date. Make sure that your list of accomplishments that you keep either in a notebook or on email or in Evernote or wherever you keep them is up to date. And you put those emails from your colleague that said she was awesome on this deal. Put all those in that kudos file and keep that up to date. But keep your resume up to date as well. I think it's important. The other thing, Deborah, I think that you touched on a little bit is stay off of autopilot. So I think so many of our careers are just on autopilot and you fall into something and you're like, oh, I'll do this till I, you know, till whatever, and don't really actively or proactively manage things. And I think keeping your resume updated forces you to stay off of autopilot and be like, do I still want this? And I think one of the things I'm hearing over the last 18 months is that people are like, I don't want to stay in this job. Like, this is not the company for me. I don't like how they treat people. I'm not going to stay in this. Or they're like, this is a great place. I do want to stay here. So they've kind of come to either of those conclusions, and it's really polarizing people. And I think we're in an interesting time over the next year or so when people really choose themselves and choose what they want to be doing. We have like 2 minutes left. Joyce and Sue, I'll give you the last words, and then I'll just wrap up for everybody. Joyce.
You know what I would just say, and this is my cheerleader side coming off after 10 years, is, and having been on a journey last year that was really hard, and I'm really mm-hmm. grateful to everybody that was my board of directors, I would just say, spend the time, go inward. You have gifts. It may not be readily apparent where to apply them, but you have them. So just figure out what they are, and then you'll know what to look for. So I think the going inward part was my big lesson last year, is really to take the time to pause, reflect, and then go look, as opposed to doing your job search on autopilot. Right. That would be my two cents.
Excellent. Sue.
And I'll follow on that, which is, I think to the extent that you feel you haven't done a great job creating a compelling resume, take a long, hard look at the type of jobs that are interesting to you and for which you feel you're qualified. They probably are doing a great job, or at least a better job than you've been maybe, at describing the type of people they're going for, the type of skills, the approach, the mindset, the characteristics, and see whether or not, I'm not saying copy them wholesale, not at all, but see whether or not that sparks some creativity in terms of how you could describe yourself in your own resume, especially where you've got two or three jobs that are of interest to you. If you end up creating something that is a great blend of those two or three jobs of things you're actually capable of doing, I think it may help to spark your creativity to describe yourself in a more full, more compelling, more convincing way.
Yeah, I think that's important. I like to look at a lot of samples and then say, oh, this is how I would describe myself after reading all those. Joyce and Sue, I really appreciate your expertise and sharing that with everybody. And Deborah, Myra, and Ellen, I super appreciate your vulnerability and your willingness to put yourself out there. Like I said, I'll put the documents up and I'll send the recording around to everybody. And I do want to just say, if you would like to download my book, I'm going to see if I can put this up here. Just soniasigler.com/book will get you Welcome to the Next Level for free. And then if you want book two, which some of the things Joyce just mentioned in terms of reflecting and going inward, just put a two at the end of that. So soniasigler.com/book2, and you'll get that second one. So I really appreciate all of your expertise, and gosh, it's been a learning experience for me. I always learn something from these, and I appreciate you guys and helping people get to the next level. I'm going to stop the recording now.